I'm Dave. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the 9:45 late meeting, which is 9:52, which ain't too bad for us. I know a fair amount of you. Some of you don't know me. And I'll be honest, I'm nervous as hell. I'll relax in 5 or 10 minutes. When I got a text saying, would I want to do this, you know, we're asking you, would you do this workshop? My first thought was, fuck, what, you know, why the fuck would they ask me to do a fucking workshop on anger? And I got resentful. And then after a few minutes, I realized I get the honeymoon suite. You know, if you speak, you get to be in the front of the cabin. I'm like, all right, you know, I'll do it. But I still don't know why they asked me. And then I was thinking about it a little bit, and I realized I own this. And if you got one of these on your clothing selection, you may have a problem with anger. And my fantasy is to go into one of those t-shirt shops and say, could you put the southern version of this in the back, which is, of course, fuck all y'all. Alright? So I'm gonna talk about AA. I'm gonna talk about my take on what we're talking about. End with AA. Then take some questions. And then we're going to just pass the mic around, and depending on how late it is, we'll stay till people are done sharing, because I've had a bunch of people say, I'm sending someone here, they have a problem with anger. And I assume, you know, half of you have been sent here, the other half in denial about your own anger. And when it is time to share, the only thing I'm going to ask is don't share and then leave. I'm not pointing at any particular people when I say, don't just share and leave, like share and stick around and be there for your fellow men. Alright. I don't know about you guys, but the first thing I think of, and by the way, you know how spiritual someone is by how much stuff they have, you know, coming out of their big book. I just put these pamphlets in to impress you guys because they were laying around. So the first thing I think of when I hear anger in AA is resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have become spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically, and in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. And it gives us a tool, you know, which is the inventory to start dealing with our resentments. Second thing I think of is AA's position on anger is no. No. And it says right here, we were to live, we had to be free of anger. Well, there's no vagueness there. And then it says, the grouch and the brain, okay, if we were to live, we had to be free of anger, period. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. So I looked up what that meant. And it said brainstorm was not like today where we brainstorm ideas. Brainstorm back then meant violent derangement of the mind. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. All right? So what's AA's position on AA? I mean, what's AA's position on anger? No. No. Don't be angry. 12 and 12. Again, spiritual. It says, it is a spiritual axiom that every time we are disturbed, no matter what the cause, there is something wrong with us. If I point a finger at you, there's three pointing back at me. That's a mind blower for a lot of us. Alright? If somebody hurts us and we are sore, we are in the wrong also. But are there exceptions to this rule? What about justifiable anger? You guys ever hear that? Yeah. I have a right to be angry. And by the way, there's no such thing as justifiable narcissism either. Right? I just want to throw that out. No charge for that one. If someone cheats us, aren't we entitled to be mad? Can't we be properly angry with self-righteous folk? For us of AA, these are dangerous exceptions. We have found that justified anger ought to be left at those better qualified to handle it. Goes on, it says, nor were we ever skillful in separating justified from unjustified anger. As we saw it, our wrath was always justified. Anger, that occasional luxury of more balanced people, normal people, could keep us on an emotional jag indefinitely. These emotional dry benders often led straight to the bottom. Other kinds of disturbances, jealousy, envy, self-pity, or hurt pride did the same thing. So to me, they're lumping anger in with a whole bunch of stuff that we should be avoiding and getting rid of. Step three, everywhere he sees people filled with anger and fear, society breaking up into warring fragments. This was written in 1953. Luckily, we've solved this issue by now. We're a much more unified nation and planet. So I read that, and I feel like I'm screwed because I got anger, all right? I got an edge to me. I heard someone tell their story, and they said, I was narrow-minded and hard-hearted. And she goes, now I'm trying to be open-minded and soft-hearted. I thought that was cool. I've never been hard-hearted, like I'm a cold, shut-down kind of dude. But I thought because I was kind of in touch with my feelings, I was allowed to walk around with anger. My take on the AA position of don't be angry is don't be rageful. What's the difference between anger and rage? Anger's anger. Rage is violent anger out of control. The brainstorm they were talking. That out of controlness to me is the key. I'm allowed to be angry. So now I'm going to talk from me. And I have a lot of shame when I say this out loud to you people. Do not tell anybody, not in this room, but I am a therapist, okay? Keep that between us. People that are part of the rock, they often don't like therapy or therapists, and for some reason they feel like, you know, therapy has done some of them wrong. You know, it could have something to do with, you know, involuntary commitments. It could have something to do with having lousy therapists, but I'm a therapist, so just give me a little grace here, and I'll try not to be all therapy-ish. And my buddy asked me if I'm going to be talking about, you know, from me or the book, and I said my goal is to perfectly combine them into one unified principle, so y'all just float out of here. And I'm going to be joking, and some of you probably are not laughing because this isn't funny. If you grew up in a violent home, you're not going to laugh a lot about what I have to say. If you grew up not being allowed to have feelings, I hope you start giving yourself permission to have some feelings. But then you may need some help in what to do with those feelings. All right? And that's where sometimes you may need to go to a therapist, or you may need to just figure out what to do to deal with the anger in an appropriate way. All right. I'm going to talk to you about feelings. Feelings are often made fun of in AA, but tough noogies. When I went to rehab in 1991, every building had a fountain in front of it, and they said the fountains are here to symbolize the free-flowing of feelings, the freeing up of emotions that we want you guys to have. I thought that was a bunch of shit, and then I bought a house, and it had two water ponds just flowing with water. I'm like, okay. Anybody here? Has anybody here ever a baby when they were born? Anybody here born a baby? Okay. If you look at a baby, they're going to have four feelings that anybody in this room could identify. They're going to be mad, sad, glad, and scared. So I'm going to write that down. So here's what's really cool is I could show all of us a picture of a mad baby. We go, that baby's mad. I'll show you a sad baby. We'd all agree that baby looks sad. Show you a happy baby. We'd all agree. Show you a scared baby. We'd all agree that baby looks scared. And then I could take pictures of these babies to primitive tribes where they've never seen any cultures other than their own and show them pictures of our babies, and they'd be like, that's a mad baby. That's a scared baby. It's universally recognized. Any questions about that? Now, you look at other mammals. You could see Same thing with other mammals. And we're wired to just receive that message from other animals. So, for example, if I'm walking down the street, I hear some kittens crying in distress, it's hard for me to ignore. All right? We're just wired to deal with these feelings. We all had these feelings. We grow older, 3 months, 6 months, 9 months old, and something happens. And what happens is we're in a crib or we're somewhere and we're upset and we cry and no one comes and gets us. So we cry louder and no one comes and gets us. We look around and we go, oh, I'm all alone. I thought the whole world was me. When you're a baby and your mom holds you, you don't know it's your mom. You're in this thing where it's just you and your mom. Dad holds you. You don't know there's a dad in me. It just feels like the whole world is just me, 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 me. Self-centered. We're born self-centered. So the next two feelings are alone. And the opposite of alone is connected. Love. We don't know we're alone, we don't know we're connected until we start getting old enough to figure that shit out. And those of us that are lucky feel a lot of the connection and not a lot of the alone. And just hold that thought for a second. The last two feelings are lovely, wonderful feelings that we never have ourselves. They're given to us by others. Anybody know what they are? Shame and guilt. All right? Shame and guilt. No baby in the world is born sitting in a nursery at Northside Hospital and looks over at the other crib and goes, look at the size of the crap in that kid's diaper. I'm not a good crapper. I feel a lot of shame right now. I need to be crapping like that kid over there. No kid walking around feeling guilty about crying. Guilt and shame happens when some adult says to us, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. You made a mistake. And I'll just throw this out. For me, getting into recovery, and by the way, my sobriety dates, I guess we're supposed to say this, 9/23/91. I was 31 years old. I now have 32 years of sobriety. So that's kind of cool that I've been sober longer than I was using, although I wasn't really doing a lot of coke or heroin when I was 5 or 6 years old. It didn't start, you know. But I was fucked up the first 31 years of my life, and I've been sober 32. For me in recovery, early on, I heard this thing, which is shame and guilt is different. I was in Home Depot, and I stole this. I feel like I made a mistake. I did something wrong. I did something no good. I stole this pen. That's guilt. Shame is, I was in Home Depot, I stole this pen. Something wrong with me. I'm broken. I'm no good. I did something no good. I feel guilty. I'm no good. Big difference. Big difference. All right. Feelings. The room's very quiet. I wonder, are you guys... Yeah, any questions? Am I hitting anybody? Okay. So when I look at feelings, I got that one. That's what today's thing is about. Mad. And to me, it's just one of the feelings. Now, there's one more feeling that some people would say belong up there, and it's disgust. That you want. That, like, if anybody says to me, "I feel confused." Well, what do you feel? I'm feeling resentment. All right, what is that? Well. Anger. I'm nervous. What do you? That's fear. I'm dreading going to visit my parents. Well, fear again. Your feelings are going to fit in one of those eight words. Disgust is a little different. I could throw that one up there. All right. So feelings are not facts. We feel stuff sometimes based on total falsehoods. We also get confused. When I talked about those babies earlier, if I ask a baby, what are you feeling? They're not going to answer because they can't talk. But sometimes they're not. When they get old enough to answer, they're wrong sometimes. The cliche is we men were allowed to feel one feeling growing up, and it was anger. We were not allowed to feel sad or scared or lonely or shame. Okay? Women were allowed to feel sad, were not allowed to feel angry. Does that make sense? If a guy's sad, something's bothering him, he will tell you he is angry. He won't say, I am sad. If a woman gets angry, she will start crying and look all sad. She's not allowed to get angry. Make sense? Another story is, I was a newlywed. First marriage. And by the way, I've had two marriages. I've had a bad marriage. I've had a good marriage. A good marriage is better than a bad marriage. You can quote me on that one. So I marry this woman, the first wife, and she happens not to have been working, and I was working, and we come home from our honeymoon, and I go to work. First day back in the States going to work. And do you guys know we're all cavemen? Like, basically, our bodies have not changed. Everybody knows that? Like, there are cell phones now, and computers, and airplanes, but our bodies are no different than cavemen bodies. And we're still wired, and we're still pretty primitive. So I come home from work, and I'm dragging this buffalo behind me. Not literally, but I just got home, bringing home the bacon. I walk in the house to my new bride, and I expected a big-ass greeting, and probably oral sex, and she's on the phone, landline. She's talking. I don't say anything. Second day, I come home from work, same thing. I walk in, ready to get greeted by my new wife, talking to a friend, talking about our honeymoon. Third day, I walk in, come home. She's on the phone. I am pissed. I say, "Will you get off the phone? What are you talking about? Get off the phone. Every time I come home, you're on the phone. If you gave me a lie detector test and asked me a bunch of questions, Dave, are you angry right now? I'd say, yes, I am, and I would pass the test. The lie detector would say I was telling the truth. I felt angry. What I was really feeling was fear and alone. All right, I was feeling all alone, but I'm not allowed to feel alone. I'm allowed to be angry. All right. So a lot of what we need to do is get clear about what we're feeling. How do we do that? Slow down. Breathe. Check in with yourself. I want to say this. You won't be miserable. There's five ways to be miserable. Be sad, depressed, be scared, anxious. And by the way, those are the two biggies. That's what drives most people into therapy, fear and sadness. Automobiles also, that usually is what gets them there, but fear and sadness. You want to be miserable, those are your two main ones. The other three are anger, shame, and aloneness. And aloneness is often, people come in because they are literally alone. That happens, but a lot of times people come in and they're alone because they don't know how to connect with others. I'm going to argue that some of you guys in this room have trouble connecting with others. And that's why we like to get messed up. We get angry, we get messed up, the anger goes away. We get sad, we get messed up, the sadness goes away. We feel shame, which is a biggie. Shame's very popular. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Brené Brown. Woman's building mansions because she studied shame and broke it down. And I recommend everybody in this room Google Brené Brown. B-R-E-N-E. Brown. Two TED Talks. First TED Talk made her famous. The second one, she talked about how the fame has messed with her. So you'll know you're listening to them in the wrong order if the first one you listen to, she talks about how fame has made her miserable. Go back to the first one. Brilliant. Brilliant stuff. Shame. Shame is the inherent belief that there's something wrong with me and I'm unlovable. I think a lot of us have that. All right. I believe I got a head, I got a heart, and I got a gut. I think, I feel, And then this other thing, my gut, my spiritual connection, my soul, the deeper stuff in life. I have to get in my gut to do what I would consider the real important stuff in life, which is being a friend, being a father, and being loving your job and loving your neighbor. My gut's important to me. Head is thinking. Head thinking. Behaviors are behaviors. I think that's kind of a lot of what we do today in therapy is they focus on your thinking. Cognitive behavior therapy, DBT. Change your thinking. What's the AA version of that? We can act our way into good thinking, but we can't think our way into good acting. Okay. Acting, thinking, change it, good. If it works for you, cool. I don't need to see you in my office. Down in here, though, this is the harder stuff. This is the muckier stuff. This is the murkier stuff. It's hard to touch feelings. It's hard to touch frozen feelings. When I got sober, this guy used to talk about the longest 18 inches in the world. You know what that is? It goes from here to here. From my head to my heart. That's the same guy who said, my wife told me she could always tell when I was lying because my lips were moving. I thought that was brilliant. I thought he made that up. Turns out he didn't make that up. So I got to get everything in line. When I'm in line, when my head and my heart and my gut are feeling in alignment, I'm okay. When I'm off, I'm off. I was talking to guys about this, and a lot of guys, guess what they talk about when I say anger? I have road rage. Why do I get pissed off in a car? The answer is, I don't know. I think what the car does for us is it gives us a little distance from our neighbor, and it frees us up to be, I don't know, get in touch with our inner asshole. I know for me, I'm in a hurry. I know for me, my driving is a barometer of where I'm at. Like if I'm in an okay place and somebody cuts me off, I'm okay. If I'm not in an okay place, I want that guy dead. And then I do stuff, I don't know if you guys ever do this, which is on the road, I'm here to educate others. My job is to teach. So if someone's in the left lane not going fast enough, I'll go around them, and then I will tell them which lane they should be in, and they thank me. It's just so lovely. I've had two instances of just white anger, just pure rage in sobriety. One was a guy was following too close to me, and he just wouldn't get off my butt, and I had my two little kids in the car. And I really felt like that caveman whose family was being threatened. And I jumped out of the car. And my wife said, "Oh, don't do it." And the guy was very helpful. He tried to run me over. I stepped aside, and he went by. And that was the end of that. The other one involved protecting my kids, too, which is a different story. The other thing about being in a car is because we're cavemen, when we feel anger, our bodies are coursing with chemicals. All right, and there are people that know brain stuff better than me could tell you what it is. There's cortisol, and there's adrenaline, and there's... And it's not good for us. I don't know if you guys know that. Walking around in a state of rage, or walking around in a state of anger, or walking around in a state of fear, I think ages us. My dad hid out from the Nazis as a young man. He was not in a concentration camp, but he avoided it. But he never dealt with that. So I had an angry dad. And when he was 50, he had open heart surgery. When he was 55, he had second open heart surgery. He was dead at 60. I think anger killed him. I think untreated trauma killed him. I just think he never dealt with his shit. What a coincidence. He gives birth to me, and here I am helping others deal with their shit. You know, I'm trying to help my patients and hopefully one or two of you, because I couldn't help my dad. I talk to him sometimes about Germany or feelings or immigration, and he just gets so fucking pissed at me. Like, I once asked him, what do you think about immigration limits? He's like, we live in America, and anybody wants to come to me? And he got so, that was the end of the conversation. All right. So I have to be in alignment. And sometimes we don't know when we're in alignment or not. And that's where we need to be talking to our friends, our posse, our AA men, and just ask them, how am I doing? Am I okay? Because I'm feeling not okay. And they'll be like, no, I think you're okay. Or vice versa, I'm feeling I'm okay. How do you think I'm doing? They're like, no, you're tough to be around. Sometimes I'm tough to be around. I have an edge. I was not a good high school basketball player. I wasn't good enough. And when I got to be 18, 19, 20, I became a very good basketball player in, you know, college, intramurals, nothing for real. But I was the rebounder guy. And I used to pride myself on being all elbows and ass. Like, I'd put my ass in, and I would just get the rebounds. And it was an anger thing. Anger works sometimes. All right? When I'm at the watering hole and I'm a caveman and there's a saber-toothed tiger about to attack my family and I get angry, is that a bad thing? No, it's a good thing. It's going to help keep my family alive. I'm walking down the street in Manhattan and some mugger jumps out and wants to kill me or whoever and I get angry, is that a bad thing? No, it's a good thing. The problem is when I'm driving to work and I'm going to be a couple minutes late and there's a yellow light and there's four cars, and the first car goes through, and the third car, if he goes through, I'm right behind him. We're both going to break the law. And then he has the nerve to stop because he wants a red light. He makes me late, and I want to murder that guy. I think I'm taking literally minutes off my life, maybe hours, and that's helpful to me. I don't have a lot of tools for you guys on how to mentally think through your anger. I don't. That's one of them. Anger is an energy. Depression is a lack of energy. Anxiety is an energy. Happy, that's easy. Everybody wants to be happy. People often say, you know, there's eight of them here. Only two are good. Well, no. Your dog dies and you're sad. Good. You should be sad. You should mourn and grieve. 5 minutes ago, someone said, how you doing? I said, I'm nervous. Yeah, good. Good. It's not bad. It's good. Gets me focused. Focused on how little you guys are moving. Is this on? Just kidding. With that energy, with the anger, I think you got to do something with it. So here's my free advice. Own your anger and discharge it. Get it out of you in an appropriate way. What's an appropriate way? Not harming others. Don't make a fool of yourself publicly unless you're into that kind of thing. But if I get cut off and I'm mad and I go, mother, and I just curse and it's just me in the car and I get that out of me, that's a good thing. If I'm walking around with anger and it ain't getting out of my body and I take a wiffle ball bat and I go in my bedroom and I smack the hell out of my bed, put a couple pillows up, that's a good thing. No one was harmed in the making of that bed-hitting incident. The problem for me, like the problem is for a lot of you guys, if you ever actually do that, once you like take one whack with the thing, the anger is going to stop. Because we're not used to letting our anger out in a healthy way. That's no fun. It's fun getting in someone's face and going back and forth. That we know how to do. But to just get it out cleanly, try it. Do it in the privacy of your home, all right? If I'm grunting and growling. I once, years ago in an AA meeting, talked about, you know, screaming in my car, it was okay, and some guy came up to me. I said, I was screaming in my car, but like my throat was hurting. And the guy comes up to me, he goes, I like to growl. Try growling. I'm like, okay, you know, growling works too. It doesn't hurt your throat as much. Anger is an energy. Get it out. If you're an NFL middle linebacker, don't get it out till Sunday at 1 o'clock. Use it appropriately. But most of us are not professional anger concentrators. It doesn't work for most of us. Oh, so hitting the bed. Then I heard about a guy who said he liked to take a bat and go in the woods and hit a tree with the bat because he liked to feel the sting in his hands. He goes, I needed that sting to give me the feedback that I'm getting that anger out. I'm like, okay. Heard about another guy used to go to garage sales and buy 20 plates for a dollar and drive around with those plates in the car. And when they were having one of those days where they were going to kill somebody, they would, he'd find a wall somewhere and he'd throw those plates, and just seeing the shattering and hearing the noise helped him get that out. And then somebody told me in Japan they have rage rooms. All right? Do we have them in America? Yep, we do. All right. Rage is, it's not a word I like, but I like the idea of going somewhere where I can make a mess and not care how I look, not care about cleaning up, getting that out. Yes?
Quick question. How do I healthily release the anger?
How do I healthily release the anger, other than those three or four ideas about smacking the hell out of things? That's one way. More of the same. So something I could do with a client is take a towel. Have them take the towel, twist it, I'm holding it. I can say, now imagine your mother-in-law's neck in the towel. I love my mother-in-law. And you can get it in here. Some people carry their anger in their legs. You could do this thing where you squat and you feel that tension in your thighs. You got to get it out. Is that what you're? Are you asking for another? Hold on. You're asking for another thing.
I get that the chemical, whatever it is, cortisol coursing through your body. You got to expedite that with the exercises.
You got to get it out of you. Yeah. So in AA, we like to inventory. Do it. But at some point, you're still gonna be carrying that shit around with you. And that's where you gotta get it out. I don't know any other way except you need to find the route that works for you. Yelling, choking, hitting, not humans. Alright? Writing letters sometimes. But again, when I write a letter, I'm up here. But sometimes that helps. Writing letters that you know you don't need to send, sometimes that helps. Okay? Is that enough?
What about breathing exercises?
Grieving?
Breathing.
Thank you for...
I mean, breathing, I went through some counseling there, and that was, I thought it was silly. Extra silly. More of anything was... What do you call those balls?
Exercise balls where you squeeze them, the grip squeezers. So that's more of what I was prescribing earlier, which is just getting that energy out. Breathing to get rid of anger, I don't want to even pretend I know how to do that. My definition of breath work is to just slow myself down. To inhale for a count of 5 and exhale for a count of 7. It relaxes me. Go in for a count of 8, out for a count of 10. It relaxes me. I don't think that's getting rid of the anger. I think it helps me not murder somebody, but I don't think the anger goes away. I think we got to just literally figure out what we're doing inside and get it out. And I can't tell you exactly how to do that.
You said earlier, and I think I got it, that we're only allowed to get angry as men. And, I'm sad, but I act angry. So how can you find out without getting help from somebody who can figure it out with you, whether it's not something, shame or depression, really beneath the anger, but you're using anger to deal with it, and you're never going to get rid of it because you don't know what it is?
Well, there's the thing I said earlier about getting with some guys. And feeling safe enough to just talk about it with them, with your sponsor, with your sponsee. Or just, you know, you may have to bite the bullet and pay a therapist. You may have to do some internet sleuthing and see what's the difference between anger and sadness. How could I tell? Depression is going to make you want to knock it off the couch. Anger is going to be wanting you to get up and go punch something. A lot of men get diagnosed with depression because they got anger just pushed way the hell down. Alright? And then I would argue their shame pushed way the hell down. I'm not gonna lie, 90% of this shit is from our childhood. Alright? I was talking with a guy earlier and he told me a story about just dealing with his own therapy, with his own, inner child, which Bill Sanders, may he rest in peace, used to make fun of that word, inner child. Well, guess what? We have little kids inside of us that need to be heard. All right? It's funny. If I look at the number of men that would say I have a problem with depression versus the number of men that would say I have a problem with anger, I think most men would go for depression. I just think it's a more prominent thing because there's medicine available. There's no medicine to stop being angry. And in America, we know how to sell medicine. Did I see another hand?
Yeah. So a little confused, I guess, on the premise where we're starting from. You know, so if anger is this tribal feeling, right, that everyone emotes, even from, like, I guess you said infancy, but isn't it resentment that we need to watch out for? I mean, because I'm going to get angry regardless if I want to not or not. You know, it just happens. You don't call on me, I get mad. Somebody cuts me off, I get mad, right? I get angry, mad. And but if I'm like plotting to go to your house next week, see, that's the kind of like stuff I was dealing with when I got into the rooms. It wasn't like, you know, you cut me off. I didn't get drunk off that. It was like, you know, my stepdad getting us hooked on fucking methamphetamine to our kids. You know, that's a resentment.
And I said earlier, if you grew up in a violent home, this talk may not be sufficient. If you grew up with that kind of anger towards this guy, you got to do something with it. Because I'm telling you, that's going to kill you before it kills him. You got to get that out. Now, how are you going to do that? I don't have the magic bullet for you, but I could point you in a direction where you just find someone that knows what the hell they're doing, pay them some money, and just figure out what to do with it. Because let's say the resentment gets you drunk. Okay, well, it happens. Let's say it doesn't get you drunk. I don't know about you, but I meet plenty of guys 20, 30 years that are seething. Seething with anger. I don't want that. I like the buoyant guys. I like the light guys. I like the guy who say, "How you doing?" And he says, "You know, I'm good. If I was any better, I'd be twins," or whatever Southern people say. That anger I'm feeling from 8 feet away, I you got to do something with that. And is he alive? Okay, so there's something to be done there, and you may not ever get the chance to do it directly, but you could do it indirectly. You can do it indirectly. My mom was a handful, and I went to a therapy place once, and I beat the shit out of my mom, not literally, metaphorically. So someone was pretending to be my mom, and I was taking a bat, and I was beating the shit out of something. Now this is controversial, by the way. There are people that say, oh, if you start doing that kind of therapy, it makes the anger worse, not better. Bullshit. I think it leaves you. I did this anger work on my mom. About a month later, I'm eating lunch with her, and she's like, "What's new?" Blah, blah, blah. And she goes, you seem kind of happy. I go, I am. She goes, you seem good. I go, I am. She goes, "Anything new?" I go, "No, nothing. You know, just good to see you." I don't say, "Oh, by the way, Mom, a month ago I was beating the living crap out of you." She doesn't need to know that. She doesn't need to know that, but she felt a little something different. That's the kind of stuff I would ask you to do. I would ask you to get focused on what it is you're pissed about and then get it out. Because carrying around ain't going to work. It ain't going to work.
I was going to say, my experience with a lot of this in learning, I think somebody in AA turned me on to a book called You Can't Make Me Angry, and I started learning about how anger was always a secondary emotion, and it was the primary was always either feeling fear or feeling hurt. And if I could get at what that's about, that's the real issue at hand. And I think about where I would get mad at my kids, and I felt so unfairly judged by myself, and that, you know, so to do something, they wouldn't do it, so I had to get a little bit sterner, a little bit louder. And you get that 5, 6, 7 times, you start to get pretty intense. And then they look like really terrified because I've had to really raise my voice. And I think that's not fair. If you would just do it when I was being nice, and I would just be so. And it took me 2 years of looking into that. What's the fear and hurt underneath to figure that out? And when I got to the part of the fear is they're not listening to you because you're not worth being listened to. And that was childhood shit. Where they're not listening to you because you're not a good parent and you're not doing it correctly, you're fucking up your kids. It took me 2 years to figure that out. But once I did, I was able to get some peace. Because anger is so empowering, like you're saying, but when I get at that vulnerable hurt part, the anger goes away and I'm talking about what the real issue is and able to kind of process some of that stuff. And I think the other thing for me has been, like so we talk about breath, like breathing and whatever else is, being able to get centered because I think you're kind of getting at it. You talk about us being cavemen, you know, we're in our fight or flight, we're in our amygdala of the back of the brain. It's not a choice. You literally are unable to access your prefrontal cortex, which is where critical thinking and executive functioning takes place, and that's why you do stupid things. So if I act before I calm down, I'm absolutely going to F it up. But if I can get to where I can chill, now the blood flow goes back to the front of my brain and I can make decisions. And so if I can keep that in mind and kind of sit down, and now when people try to meditate, you get centered, and that helps me get into like theta waves in the brain, and that detaches you from the emotions in your body, the tension in your gut, and allows me to get a little bit of peace, so I can make a better decision. My son was effing with me. Somebody met me this weekend, and we were arguing over text, and I was like, no, we need to talk about this. And he was asking me because he knows what I do with meditation and all this energy and all this stuff. He's like, you need to go do something with your chakras or something. And get hey, he might even be in the session, by the way. But I tell you, the only thing was, I'm listening to your little shit. And instead I went, you know what? I think he's right. I said, I am going to meditate. Why won't you join me? He says, no. And I did. I got centered, and I got my shit together, and I got cool, and I was able to come out and have a conversation that was uncomfortable, but I was able to be in a good place to have it because of doing some of those things.
Love and fear are the only two real emotions. Everything comes out of that. Now, I got pissed off at AA. You read the first 164 pages, and you drink the Kool-Aid, and they say, we realize we only know a little. So the process of AA is we talk about it, we write about it, we pray about it, and then we do something about it. Okay? It's real simple, simple program, complicated people. I was raised in AA that professional problems, you go to professional people. If I've got financial problems, I could tell my sponsor, but I may go see an accountant. If I've got problems with my teeth, I better go. I could tell my sponsor, hey, I got problems with teeth. Go see a dentist. And there's nothing wrong with therapy. There's nothing wrong with seeing a professional person because some of this stuff in AA is not going to fix all of this. I think AA is a good place for us to start to talk and admit to other people the exact things you are wrong, but sometimes it doesn't work. Now, if you're athletic, you may want to run 10 miles when you get angry, or shoot 100 free throws, or hit a boxing, a punching bag. You know? Brother was talking about what, early he's talking about being a musician. You fucking hit that piano till it breaks and play some angry music. But there's ways to get out, and I don't want to limit myself in terms of how do I, what works for me may not work for you. You know, I may want to run around the block 100 times. They say Larry Bird was such a great ball player. He had a troubled childhood. He went out and shot buckets. Some of these boxes are great boxes that taken out that inner child. Some of that shit that they can't talk about. An athlete, football, tomorrow, it's a lot of angry guys playing football. And hockey, I love that. They hold resentments from season to season. They'll start off the preseason punching somebody from last year. I love that. I say, damn, finding my path. What do I need to do? I've got to at least admit something is bothering me. I may not know what it is. So I'll write it out.
That
I gotta do something about it.
Alright, thank you.
I was told a few years back that I was told this in a recovery meeting in another fellowship. They said, hey, you're suffering from they called it low grade anxiety. But basically, and I'll admit this, when I first got here, I couldn't point to those feelings accurately. I didn't know what I was feeling. And I think I walked around for a long time with just like this buzz, numbness. And I've heard it be explained in this room, half cocked in the pissed off position. I think that was me. And I didn't think I could, everything was kind of like just a gray. And then it went to red. Any thoughts on that? How that plays into this? So the question is like a low grade anxiety or just like just amount of like, anxiety always going on where I'm kind of numbed out from my feelings.
I think we all have low grade anxiety. We all walk around with some version of fear, some version of not being comfortable in my own skin. When I first got sober, I used to listen to, I don't know, it was 99X, whatever the local station was, and every fourth song was Pink Floyd, Comfortably Numb.
Nice.
And that was what I was doing. I'm like, well, I don't have that medical option now of using, you know, drugs or alcohol to just numb it out. So I'm not, that low-grade anger, low-grade anxiety, low-grade shame, the feeling alone. There's two kinds of feeling alone. You feel alone when you're in a room by yourself and no one's calling you. But worse than that is you feel alone when you're at a party and you feel like everybody else is talking to each other and no one's talking to you. All that shit is low grade. And I think everybody in this room found an answer when we went glug, 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 smoke, 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 snort, 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 inject, inject. And by the way, I didn't do heroin. I was just kidding. But heroin addicts, like, you know, they don't think you know anything about recovery if you didn't shoot heroin. I found the answer to being okay through external chemical. I'm not sure what you're saying in sobriety, you're still walking around with low grade anxiety?
For a long period of time, I felt like if, the volume was 10 when I was getting totally pissed off and throwing a shit fit.
Okay.
I would say the volume, I think I walked around with a volume at a 4.
Okay, I was gonna end on, I'm gonna end with that in a sec. Alright. Meeting. You and the hat, handsome, guy there.
So, I know for myself, and I don't wanna put your opinion in, but the whole pause that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me really ties into me with whether it's a bat to the pillow on the bed, meditation, breathing, pausing before I respond to things sometimes. Example, my wife may say something that really ticks me off, and it may be the next day, and I go, you know, I'll explain myself. She said, well, I was really delayed, and I'm like, I was using the pause to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, but for me, you know, pausing, being able to really help people think in perspective, which is another gift of Alcoholics Anonymous, do you think that a lot of these tie into our pause in our program?
So the question is, should we use pause? Should we use restraint?
These techniques tie into the pause.
Yeah, restraint of tongue and pen, and it's been said, restraint of tongue and send. Yeah, we should slow down because, you know, again, feelings are not easily understood by a lot of us. And shit, 8 out of 10 times when someone is offended against me and I say to them, hey, you offended against me, they usually say, I had no idea. And then they usually say, I'm sorry. And then we're usually done. I'm a fan of slowing down. In theory, in practice. Next question.
I often say and believe what we really suffer from is unresolved childhood issues. And if that's the case, how do I resolve it?
Does anybody, okay, the question is, he said we are suffering from unresolved childhood issues. How do I get over it? Anybody help me here other than therapy? I mean, that feels self-serving.
There's a 12-step program for that, and it's ACA, and Adult Children of Alcoholics and Dysfunctional Families, and if you want to know more about it, you can see.
So there's other fellowships. There's Adult Children of Alcoholics, Codependents Anonymous.
Al,
yeah, but you know, they're not as good. They're not as good as we are. I don't know a better answer than just find someone to help you figure it out. That's really what I get stuck with. There's a guy in AA, lunatic, certifiably crazy. When he's on his meds, he's not really crazy, only a little crazy. When he's off his meds, he just goes off. And he picked up a chip once. And I remember him just yelling at people at Triangle. Spittle coming out of his mouth. It's like, you're all a bunch of wounded children. This is how he celebrated his AA birthday. And it was, you know, you had to separate the message from the messenger, but, you know, I'll say it without spittle coming out of my mouth. I am a wounded child, and I had pretty okay parents. All right? Those of us that were given less than okay parents or missing one or two parents, you got some stuff to unspool. And once you take the drugs and alcohol out of our body, a lot of times we get a little more uncomfortable. We get a little more angry, a little more scared, a little more sad. And if you've been sober a while and your life isn't trending better, you got to look at that. Because I didn't get sober to be miserable. I got sober to be happy. So, come see me alone and we'll see if we could, you know, find a place to land with that. All right. Question back there?
So, a huge part of my drinking was Jesus.
The question was, well, first your statement is, as I get sober, my emotions go up and down.
Yes.
Okay? And then you said, what's the difference? How do I know when I'm up, whether I'm just being angry or whether I'm being rageful? My answer is, are you harming others? There's a big difference between me growling in my car or saying the F-bomb in my car and rolling down my window and saying it to somebody. I don't want to harm others. That's not okay. I will kind of just take a little quick detour because what you just said reminds me of one of my favorite AA things, which is Bob Earl. Anybody know who Bob Earl is? So Bob Earl, another lunatic, certifiably crazy, was an AA circuit speaker in the 80s, and you could look him up, Robert or Bob Earl, E-A-R-L-L. And he spoke a lot about feelings. And he said what you just said, which is, I go up, I go down. I go up, I go down. Because when I'll speak in the first person. I used to really like weed. Weed. Marijuana. And I used to like it for little things, like if I was going to brush my teeth, I wanted to maximize the experience of brushing my teeth, so I get high before. Going to Kroger, I'd get high. And then if I was going to a concert or out to a club, I'd want to get high. So no matter where I was, I wanted to be up here. No matter where I was. Here's people. Here's me. Here's people. Here's me. And Bob Earl said he used to do the same thing. He goes, he used to want to live above it all. And then he said, but if I'm ever in the hospital and I'm really sick and I'm in the ICU unit, and you come and visit me, what do you want to see? Do you want to see this? Or do you want to see the monitors looking like this? Because this is death. This is life. I have good days, I have bad days. I have good minutes, I have bad minutes. I have good hours, I have bad hours. Today was a great day. I had some bad minutes in here. But it goes up and it goes down. Yeah, and this is life, man. Believe me, this is okay. Cause you just kinda, you learn to, I used to want to feel good all the time. Isn't that insane? I used to want to feel good all the time. You ever see Kramer on Seinfeld when he was pretending to be a Coke dealer at the bar? Ever see that? He has a cigarette, he's drinking with a cigarette in his mouth, and he says to the guy, he goes, here's to feeling good all the time. It's just like, that's what I used to think that was the purpose of life. Okay, we'll take... Not my talk. Okay.
One, I have not heard a solution to anything that I had already tried. I got a wife that's got dementia. and she's the only person in either family, her side or my side, that has ever had dementia. So I've got a problem that I don't understand. That's frustrating to start with. We don't even have any anecdotal experience with dealing with dementia. So I'm having to pick people's brains and all that kind of stuff. My typical reaction to a lot of that stuff is to get angry. Only because I don't know anything else to do. But I know that some of the things don't work. I know that pouring whiskey on is not going to change anything for the better. So I don't, that's not even an option. All those suggestions everybody's had, count to 1,000. Count to 1,000, I'm still pissed. All that stuff, and I've gotten nowhere. I went to a counselor, a therapist, and it wasn't somebody named Dave. And she said, tell me about it. And I said, okay. I said, I understand the problem. When I get angry, it's simply because I didn't get my way. I get fearful because I may not get my way tomorrow. I get resentful because I didn't get my way yesterday. I get impatient when I don't get my way when I want it. She said, well, you learned the lesson really, really well. Now what are you going to do about it? That's what I want to know. What am I going to do about it?
And she didn't have anything for you? She didn't have anything for you after. She said, what are you going to do about it? You said, I don't know. And she's like, okay.
That's basically what you're doing. We chit-chat. And I feel more comfortable, but it's not a solution. There's no solution in it.
No. And what I'm hearing is I'm angry because I don't know what's going on. I don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Down boy.
I'm going through that with my son with stage 4 cancer. And I hated that, but acceptance is the key to all my problems. As spiritual and non-medical advice that is, what I'm holding on to is accepting God's will in this situation. That's the only thing that is keeping me as calm as I am, because there's nothing that the doctors are doing. The cancer is running our lives, but I say he's got cancer ain't got him. Now, as minimalizing that may be, it's what I hold on to say God's will, not mine, be done. As painful as it is to see a loved one suffer, when there's not a lot of choices, somehow my higher power has allowed me to be sort of okay with this. And I'm a clinician But there's some things that professionals can't do unless I see peace within. I can't change it. So I don't know, but I'm with you. But that's what, listen to the Lord's Prayer today. Acceptance is the key. Thy will, not mine, be done.
And what I would add to that is, if she has what it sounds like she has, she ain't going to get better. Question is she going to get worse quickly or slowly? And that sucks. That sucks. But then I got to find a way to have peace. And then to me, the only thing you can do is show up for her. That's it. Sometimes the only thing we could do is just show up.
Even the healthcare professional can't tell me how soon it's going to change.
Well, let me tell you my version of the story, which is my wife was 33 weeks pregnant. We got in a car accident. My fault. Terrible. The ambulance said, look, she's pregnant. We're going to take her to the hospital. Doctor said, we're just going to keep her overnight. Guy drove me and my older daughter to a hotel. That's how small the town was. The doctor drove us to a hotel. Next day, they discharged from the hospital. 3 days later, I get a phone call from my wife. Tip crying, saying, meet me at the hospital, my water broke. Well, it turns out her water broke a little, but you're not supposed to have broken water. Anybody question about that? You know how babies are made? So we go to the hospital, and at Northside Hospital, they have a unit for people that don't want to have babies. 90% of the hospital is let's deliver a baby, and 10% are, you know, we're going to, and they had women from all over the world with quadruplets and quintuplets, and it was crazy. These women with like four babies growing in, they weren't allowed to sit up. Not for position, because I burn more calories than laying down. So I start asking, what's going on? And they start telling me, nurse tells me, doctor tells me. The more they told me, the more I started learning about premature births and what it means. Will the kid have to go to the NICU? Will the kid have to, you know, will he be able to breathe on his own? The more I learned, then another doctor would come in. I'm a smart guy. I'd ask some questions. He would tell me, you know, now I'm like filling my head up with knowledge. And then respiratory therapist, you know, and I was making myself a lunatic. The more I learned, my anxiety got higher, not less. And all of a sudden it hit me. I got to stop doing this. I got to stop grilling the professionals because nothing I'm learning is making me go, whew, everything's going to be okay. You know? Everything I heard was you're going to have a baby, and we're going to try and keep that baby in as long as possible. And every day that baby stays in saves you 7 days on the NICU unit. But, you know? But the moment when I realized this was not working. Tell me more. Tell me more. Tell me more. It wasn't working. I just stopped. And I turned it over. And, you know, guys have met my son. He's 6'4". He stayed in. The thing closed, the uterus, whatever the hell is down there, closed up. And we were one of like 5% of people whose water breaks that gets to go home. They said, you're not going home. You're going to leave here with the baby. We went home. And then the baby came out, you know. There was a possibility of a good outcome. And that's why my heart goes out to you. I don't know what to say except just you got to make peace with where you are. Because at some point your wife's not even going to know how you're doing, but we'll know how you're doing. And I want you to be okay. It's going to be hard. So, thanks. Last thing.
I was 15 years sober when we went to the hospital with my wife, and we were having twins. And we had the twins, and the doctors told us that our son was probably not going to make it. The most pain I've ever experienced in my entire life. And, you know, I will say that alcohol is not a problem. If I had been in AA, I would have probably hit the fucking button. But just what you're explaining was being able to turn things over, my son, and do the next right thing, which my wife was not able to do, but they had done a couple of surgeries. I had to trust the medical professionals, and they said, he's not going to make it. And what do you want to do? And he was suffering. And so my wife just wasn't able to do it, and I had to tell them, we're not going to continue this. And, you know, they took him off everything and brought him to my wife and I in a little room. And, you know, it was heart-wrenching, you know, saying goodbye to the son I just met a couple weeks earlier. And, but that whole piece of acceptance, that whole piece about turning it over, as painful as it was, and then this anger, you know, we're good parents. How can these people that are horrible parents have children? I mean, that roller coaster for a while, but still just that acceptance of, I have no control. It was a real feeling of helplessness. And I would have never made it through that if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. There is no way in the world. The miracle of the whole thing was my daughter's great. She survived. I was able to be present for my wife and our other children. And a few months later, when the numbness kind of subsided, I realized that I never once thought about a drink or a drug when that would have been the first thought. That was a miracle. So, you know, my wife and I stayed sober through it. I had a guy tell me one time, and I'll shut up after this, but he said, you know, and I remember I heard attraction rather than promotion and so on and so forth. And he told me, he said, if you stay sober, you're going to see the best days, the most amazing life you've ever imagined. Can't imagine how good it's going to be. I went, that's attractive. And then he goes, if you stay sober, you're going to see some of the most heartbreaking, painful times you've ever felt in your life. And I went, well, that's not too damn attractive. But he was right. And I've experienced some real terrible things in my sobriety. But Alcoholics Anonymous, to God my understanding, you guys were the answer. You know? So.
Thanks. Back to the 12 and 12. It says on step 11, renew the simple request, thy will, not mine, be done. If at these points our emotional disturbance happens to be great, we will more surely keep our balance, provided we remember and repeat to ourselves a particular prayer or phrase that has appealed to us in our reading or meditation. Now, this is what's important to me. Just saying it over and over will often enable us to clear a channel choked up with anger, fear, frustration, or misunderstanding, and permit us to return to the surest help of all, our search for God's will, not our own, in the moment of stress. The anger choking up the channel towards God's will is a really important thing that they just put in this book a couple weeks ago for this presentation, because it wasn't there before. Anger gets in the way of my relationship with God, but I was at the rock when I heard Jules say, if you want to be angry at God, be angry at God. And then I don't know if you guys remember what he said. He said, it's like looking at a two-year-old, three-year-old throwing a tantrum, and you're the parent, just look at them and go, oh, that's adorable. You know, it's like, if you get angry at God, he'll be okay. He'll be okay.
What page is that on?
That is page 67. And then, the last thing I'm quoting from the literature is self-righteous anger also can be very enjoyable. All right? I like that. Because I kind of enjoy holier-than-thou stuff. And then I'm going to end with the story of the pond. And it goes like this. You guys ever see a pond? You ever throw a pebble in a pond? What happens? Little ripples. You ever take a 30-pound boulder, throw it in a pond? What happens? Big splash, John. Dumbass. So if I throw a little pebble in, I get ripples. If I throw a big boulder in, I get big splash. Any questions? Never in the history of ponds has somebody thrown a little pebble in and had a huge splash. Never in the history of ponds has anybody thrown a big boulder in and had tiny, gentle ripples. Ponds react perfectly. On the other hand, those of us of the human sort, we don't react perfectly. So if that guy there is 3 minutes late for something, and he walks in, and he goes, sorry, I'm late, and I go, bam, you, and I let him have it. Who, what's that about? Me. Because if I'm a pond, 3 minutes late, it's like, fine. But if I react big, there's something about me. Does that make sense? If we're reacting too big, it goes back to that childhood stuff. If we're reacting too big, it goes back to the unfelt feelings of our childhood. Glug, 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 we ain't going to touch them. No drugs, no alcohol. We've got no choice but to deal with them. So I'll leave you guys with that. Here's what I'm going to request. Those that want to leave, go. Those that want to stay and share, let's stay and share. It is 11:08. We'll go for another like 20 minutes, and I will not take offense if you guys leave, and thank you for this.
Thank you.
Hey, Dave. Alright. So if you want to share, just raise your hand, and Tim's going to go around with the microphone. You have an announcement?
Yeah, but I want to share.
So I'm on the committee, and I'm the one that wanted this session because I believe we men need to deal with our anger. And I want to thank Dave for doing this. I really appreciate you stepping up. I'm real passionate about this subject. I had some real issues with anger. So a little background, I'm 18, and this guy gets in a fight with my brother and then laughs about it. And all I know is that I saw red. Everything was red. It was like I was looking through red lens glasses. And it was like I was watching. There was no sound. And I was watching from a video screen. And I saw these fists in front of my face. And this guy just went down. I saw him the next night at work. And he had all these bruises all over his face. And it was weird. And I never heard anybody talk about that until I met Bob McCullough here at The Rock. He says that's called a redout. And he said he had them. And he talked about throwing a guy down the steps. So my acquaintance with dealing with this started there. And he used to do a session. I thought he did a real good job. He talked about when you get to that point where you're in that rage, breathe. Breathe out me, breathe in God. Breathe out me, breathe in God. Breathe out me, breathe in God. What would a mature man do? And so he did a great session. And I think this was real, real beneficial tonight. So my journey with this came real to the forefront. I'm 18 years sober and my wife relapses. And I find out she was manipulating me, manipulating the docs, getting those drugs, using the pain clinic. And it was like a body blow. And I wanted to kill her. And I remember when we did that intervention, my sponsor looked at me and said, let's take a walk. And this anger just went to the next level. And it became dangerous. And so I'm 18 years sober. I'm the good guy. She's the one that relapsed. Bitch. And my plan was, I'll stay married to you, but I'm going to kick your ass the rest of our lives. I mean, what a plan for happiness. So fast forward, year and a half, she's sober, and we go to couples counseling, and she says, you got to do something about your anger. I can't stay married to you. I got up and walked out. I was so enraged because I'm the good guy. I didn't relapse. I came back in, and she told me what it was like to be married to me. She felt like an abused woman. I never touched her. She told me what the kids said about being my kid, how scared they were of me. And I was in a crisis, and I called Doug Brush over at Mar, who helped me when I was first getting sober. He goes, I don't know what to do with you. You got 18 years sober, I can put you out. She wanted me out of the house. So I got my sponsor involved, Doug, and we came up with a plan. We're going to do anger management first. We got referrals to anger management. That was first. Then I went to this place where we did some experiential therapy, beating the shit out of stuff. I'm glad I didn't know about that because I wouldn't have gone. And then I did psychotherapy for 6 months. And then I did a lot of Al-Anon work. And what I found was at that core was self-loathing and shame. But I first had to do anger management, and they talked about, I'm not going to get into it, I'm not qualified, but it was called choice-based anger management. Apparently, between the stimulus and my behavior is time, a little bit of time. I didn't know that. I thought it was automatic. They said, well, when you're screaming and raging at your son, your little son, let's say that was a 350-pound NFL linebacker, I think you can make some different choices. I'm like, right about that. So they did some analysis. I mean, they said there's two types of anger. There's trait anger, there's state anger. And if I remember right, state is about something going on. Trait is about who you are. And I walked around elevated. I walked around with a short fuse. I'm the guy that got in trouble on the soccer field when I was playing. I'm the guy that got red cards and ejected, got in fights. I was a teenager, got kicked out of soccer games because I was fighting. I was just that guy that, you know, you'd say something too, and I'd come over at you. And so I had a problem. They said, so they taught me about peace and generating peace. So, yeah, I did do some breathing, and I did all that. So it was a process. So that was my journey. So this is my anger was going to ruin my family as much as her drinking. I'm not saying I don't have anger, but I'm saying I'm dealing with it a whole lot better. And so that's where this came from. And so I miss Bob McCullough terribly. He did a great job of this. So I hope we keep doing this. Thank you. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Richard. A grand sponsor said something that made a lot of sense. He used to say this all the time. I'm angry all the time as a kid. And he said he learned that his anger covered over fear. And it's kind of like what Richard just said. But it happened so fast that he didn't realize he was scared. And when he said that to me about 20 years ago, I was like, oh, that actually makes so much sense. And then I started looking at that fear, and it's like instead of feeling like this tough guy who was mad all the time, it's like I started realizing and getting tough. In fact, I was a scared little kid inside, and I was just doing what I had to do to kind of survive. And Aubrey used to say, anger feels strong and fear feels weak. So I don't want to feel weak. I want to feel strong. So that's what was behind me wanting to be, you know, feed that anger. So I just thought that was a great insight. So I thought I'd share. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now that I've shared, I gotta go.
My name's Robert. I'm an alcoholic. I could go on for a long time talking about this, but in my family, all my life, I always had a lot of anger. I was Richard. I was the guy on the soccer field, really pushing the envelope, you know, really getting in trouble. And that's the way that I just dealt with a lot of things that had happened in my life with my mother. Things she left us, you know, things like that. But one thing forward, 10 years in sobriety, all my family, we all go to therapists, we all go to a psychiatrist, we take medication. Just the last one that never took medication texted me today, hey, Dad, they put me on Zoloft and my car is making strange noises. So I said, hey, well, your engine is going to get better, then we'll work on your car's engine. One year ago exactly, we were visiting my oldest daughter in Colorado, and we had a sit-down, because that's what we do. The Westons, the crazy Westons, the six of us, and we blow up. We have fights. We get crazy. But now we know how to land it and calm down. We have boundaries, and we sit down. And I was told a year ago, hey, Dad, we think AA is great for you, but I think you should go back to your therapist, you know? And I called the therapist, and then the therapist, which a lot of you guys know, is in the program, so that wasn't really working very well. And I got a very good therapist. And a year later, when my daughter called me, we're going to get the crazy Westons, we're going to get back together in Colorado, my daughter texts me, and she says, hey, your daughter called me and said this and that, and she's a fucking idiot. How should I react to that? In the past, I would have said, you know, like we do in Mexico, la chingada, just fuck it all. I mean, she's, you know. But I was able to put something down, and as I was writing it, it was because I had been going to my therapist, and I had resolved a lot of those issues that I thought I had resolved here. And there was one example that was just unbelievable. Joe at Sons of Serenity once spoke about how long it took him to make amends with his mother. He was in his 70s, or I don't know when he finally did that. I had already made amends, but I had empathy for him, and I thought that I needed to do it again. And then when I went to the therapist, you know, she says, well, Robert, you've probably already done it. You know, so I was able to get that, and they did. I was carrying all of that. But I have the tools. I truly believe that therapy is just priceless to do. It really complements this program. And I used to be a very pissed off, angry person. I mean, I thought crazy was a character asset. I wanted everyone to, you know, Weston's crazy, so I thought it was a great thing. So, thanks for letting me share.
So first I want to say I don't have an answer. I just want to share my experience. And I'm saying that to remind myself what I'm saying right now. When I got here, and like I asked the question about the static in my head, when my sponsor had me do my first four-step inventory, he was like, now write the character defects. I had to look those up, and I said, help me with that. He's like, you know, the 12 deadly sins, you know. I had no idea about feelings and emotions. And I'm going to say from the environment I grew up, that kept me safe because I could easily go very rapidly to fight or flight. I went to, you know, fight or flight, run like hell, or, you know, put up your dukes. And that served me well. When I got here and my kids were probably 2, 4, and 6, okay? When my 12-year-old daughter didn't clean up her room, fucking losing my shit did not help the relationship with my 12-year-old daughter. It did not make it a safe environment. When I would coach girls' sports and we were supposed to be playing a non-contact sport, and the other coach was teaching the girls how to hit the other girls with the stick, I'd literally call timeouts, and in that sport, the two coaches had to meet the referee, and I'd look at the other guy and say, if one of your girls hits one of my girls again, I'm going to take this stick and beat you in the fucking head with it. Are we clear? End it like that. Just, that's it. That was not very mature. I got a reputation, you know, I could be, have some promise of, but that really wasn't, you know, I was really having a lot of feelings. And so as I went along in this, I had to get some help outside of AA, programs that specialize in getting in touch and labeling these things, and also learning how to get in touch with myself. And the other thing I did is I took meditation seriously. My sponsor used to always say to me when I call him up and say, this is, I'm going to, you know, he would say, pause when agitated. I honestly had no idea what a pause button was. I mean, I could read those words and know that that was a good idea, but I had never experienced it at that moment. And taking meditation seriously, I actually got to experience that 1 second. What it was mentioned here before earlier about, oh, you can make a decision about your anger. If you're standing in front of a 350-pound, 6'6" defensive lineman who cut you off in traffic, or a little, some 16-year-old girl who cut you, you can make a decision about how angry you can get. You can make that decision. And getting that pause button, you know, it's just been a journey for me. And one of my greatest things that I'll say with recovery is on my 7-step list, my sponsor had me write down, you know, God removed my desire to rage at my 16-year-old, or she was 15 at the time, daughter. And I said that prayer every day for 30 days. And lo and behold, something would happen and I didn't rage at her. And I still say, she's 20, will be 21 this month. We're now just talking. She feels safe enough to talk to me about some things. But that was the damage I did. And so the amends has happened to be, you know, doing it over and over again. But this thing about anger, it has taken work beyond just what's been in these rooms. For this alcoholic, I've had to do some more work in it. But I would say it's paid off, and I'm enjoying where I would I go back there? No. I like where I am today. And where I am today does not feel good all the time. It feels fucking uncomfortable sometimes. But I don't have to look at my daughter, her face going of confusion, why are you screaming at me? Anyway, thanks.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, I'm the one who grew up with a father who was very rageful, and I learned pretty quickly that any negative emotion was not going to be something I wanted to express. And so I learned to push that down and pretend like it didn't exist. And with anger specifically, I saw what that did and determined that that was the worst of all and I was never going to have anger. So fast forward to, you know, 10 years of sobriety, I've got to find a way to deal with that anger because it's there and it, you know, it keeps happening. But I'm so good at deceiving myself that I can't always tell that I'm angry. until I've got a resentment. Or I'm throwing up because I'm, you know, and I don't know why. I don't have a good answer, but what I found is working currently. And just like with the steps, as I'm practicing, I am intentionally looking to see if I'm angry. And I am asking my inner child, you know, how you doing? Because that inner child is still in there and it's terrified to express those emotions. So I'm using that as a way to try and get at these emotions and identify them and find a way to address them in a healthy way.
When my wife had our second child, which was 12 years ago, something changed almost immediately. And we were so busy with careers and all that kind of stuff that we didn't even take into consideration it might be postpartum. But 2 years into it, it was getting worse and worse and worse. And she became wildly unpredictable, extremely angry and mean. I was getting fired from jobs that made no sense. I found out 10 years later that she was calling my bosses, threatening them, saying she knew where their wives took their children to school. I didn't know any of this stuff. And then about a year and a half ago, I'm a writer, and I started writing one day, and I didn't stop writing for 11 hours. And at the end of it, I got almost all of, or at least that was the first time I really addressed all the resentments that I had towards her and my mother-in-law and father-in-law, who enable the shit out of her. And they have her whole life. We grew up together. I've known her since she was little. Anyway, I felt very free, and it felt great. And I worked with it through my sponsor. And we have been on and off about getting a divorce or staying together. And we recently decided to just work on this because we had a pretty honest conversation about what's been going on. And now I find myself, and I think I've been doing this for a while, but I'm very conscious of it. I am punishing the shit out of this woman. Like, I want her to feel pain. I want her to hurt. I want to see it. I want to see it. And it's totally destructive. And I normally wouldn't describe myself as an angry person. I haven't been my whole life. But with this particular thing, it's like we're finally moving towards a reconciliation, which is a monumental effort. She ruined our entire lives. And I obviously had a lot to do with it. I'm not blaming her for everything. But I'm at a point right now where I can find a tiny little thing, and man, I can just rip her apart. And I do it over and over again right now, where it's almost becoming habitual. And I guess I know it's not going to solve anything, but I can't not do it. I don't know what the hell to do with it. I really don't know what to do with it. I've seen a therapist for years. Shit never works. I get more out of AA than anything else. But I just have to share that because I have not said that out loud to anybody. And I don't know if anybody's got any advice later on. I'll listen to anything. But I don't want to hurt her anymore. It's evil. I know what I'm doing is wrong. Actually, I don't know that. That's the first time I've ever said that. But anyway, I just appreciate all y'all listening to me. Thanks.
Address the unresolved childhood issues.
I thought Dave was angry when I first came around. I thought he was an angry man.
I mean, he just looked angry all the time. Then I started seeing him smile and shit, right? I'm like, okay. But I have anger issues. And at one point, I was given some medicine that I wouldn't take, but my sponsor said, Rick, maybe you should take the medicine. And I did. And it started working. It slowed me down, gave me time to think before I react. But through the psychiatry, the therapist, the medication, and the 12-step program,
life was getting pretty good, man, but I felt like I was real cool, man. I was at work like, okay. I was just laid back, because I go from 0 to 60, you know, 100 to, man, I would. And anger was my response. I ain't feel shit. I whooped your ass. I was a poor kid. I didn't joan. And I would give you a warning. And that came from my family. My dad didn't argue with, I didn't ever see my dad argue with another man or people outside the house. And he'll whoop our ass, but he would hurt people if they, cause he, you know, he was just that kind of guy. He's real cool, fun, and go loving, but he was mean. And I kind of, I'm a happy-go-lucky guy too, but I get mean real quick. And when I tell you what I mean, what I say, and I ain't gonna argue with you. And I argue with my family. I cry because I want to kill you, but I can't because you're my brother. Stuff like that, that kind of anger. But I fought a lot. That was my defensive mechanism. And today, I've had a lot of practice at, it's okay to say I'm angry, you hurt my feelings. I feel like a punk bitch because I need to slap the shit out of you. But I'm telling you, you hurt my feelings. Oh, we need to talk about that. So I can talk to men and women today. But my wife at home, God bless that lady, she got issues. You know, I jokingly say she got issues because she married me. But she do have issues because she know how crazy I can be and I have been. And she purposely pushed those buttons. She'll leave the house and do it. And I tore up the house one time. She left the house and I wanted to kill her. I wanted to beat her. And she said, did things that she knew was going to just ruin me and say, and I tore up my own house. And I'm not going to fucking clean it up. Of course, I had a sponsee come by to do some work one day, right? Yeah. you gonna leave the house like this? I said, hell, I ain't going to clean it. But the sponsee basically made me clean up or get my own house repaired. Because I was just being just that stubborn. So, I'm glad to, I still have anger issues. Now I get angry because I allow her, my wife, to push my buttons. I know she's trying to do it. And other people, you know, the new guys, I look at them and I try to be patient and tolerant. And I'm very patient and tolerant, but I can, you know, be where you are. Do it or don't do it. You know, people give me an out with these people who are so fucking smart, this microwave recovery, right? And I look at them and say, okay, well, do it your way. When you're ready to do it this way, I'm still going to be here doing it, what that was done to me, but do it your way. Have fun, you know. And then I'm going to say this about passion. I'm excited. My wife said, I'm angry. Now, this bullshit, you trying to hide behind my excitement. You know my voice go up when I get excited. I'm not angry. But people say I'm angry because my voice elevates. Well, I get excited. Man, I get out here and I get excited. Hey, you hear me cross the yard. I'm talking to somebody over here whispering. But I'm excited and my voice just raised. And people try to use that as anger. My wife used that a lot. So I have to... Because I'm not a soft-spoken guy. I'm not a calm. And I think she knows the difference, but she try to hide behind that shit. Because she's not getting help. She don't have y'all. She don't have she got a therapist, but she bullshit her. She's not really getting help. But, man, she tolerated so much with me. And hell, I don't think nobody else would put up with me, right? So I feel like I'm doing a lot of work, and sometimes I get tired. I get tired of towing that line of being the good guy, or being the practicing recovery guy, practicing my tools, and she gets to just be an asshole. But I'm labeled the bad guy, but she's being an asshole. So I thank God for this program. You know, the journey continues. I'm not where I used to be, but I know anger, and this chart, mad. You know, it's like, yeah, okay, it's a God-given instinct. But there are some healthy ways to deal with my anger. And I do it at work. I haven't got fired off a job in a long time. And I mean, I go into some folks at work. I fired off an email, an angry email. I didn't mean to send it to the president. I was sending it to one of y'all, but I fired it off and it went to him. But it was very well professionally done, and he made them look, and some people was mad, but they couldn't do anything. It was an angry email, but it was very well done. And it was, and it needed to be done, but it came out of anger. And I wasn't going to send it, but apparently it was needed to be sent. So I've learned that in anger, sometimes I do healthy things. Anger can be a friendly instinct. Anger is not always bad. It can be good, but I shouldn't have to need anger to handle situations. But it is a God-given instinct, and I know that it's okay to be angry. So I try not to not be angry anymore. You know, I just try to recognize that I'm angry and process it. And sometimes it feels good to be angry. I like profanity. I like it's comfortable threatening and literally, but you know, I'm getting older now, I'll probably get whooped, right? But it feels good. It really does. Like the ease and comfort of that drink, sometimes I could roar and I feel good. It's like, damn, that felt good. Because I feel like I'm suppressing it so much, trying to find a healthy way to deal with it. But sometimes when I do it, it's like, fuck it. You want it, here it is. But it don't feel good. It's like a hangover effect. But this is a real good topic. You know, I wasn't going to say anything because I'm not angry anymore. I'm a happy guy. But the anger still is still a tool. And it's still out of control. And I'm glad I'm on this journey. And I'm glad this workshop is here tonight, too. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
I have one more, and then we're going to desire. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Good to be here. Thank you for the topic. And I really appreciate everyone kind of opening up and kind of sharing the pretty newly married. I've been married 2 years. We don't have any kids. And I can't remember ever being so angry with somebody before in my life. I am a pretty easygoing guy. You know, I'm not quick to anger. You know, I've kind of got a natural pause in between my response. I haven't had a big need to like respond to people in an aggressive way in most situations throughout my life. When my wife comes at me, she says all these things that I just end up feeling so disrespected. And it triggers my fight or flight response. And I've got AA. You know, so I can go to the other room. I can take a break and I can go to the other room and I can write stuff down. But that doesn't always work. And what I mean is, what happened a couple weeks ago is you know, we were having a disagreement. It got escalated, and then it lasted until the next day. And then it got escalated to a point where when I came home, she came and got in my face. And she said things to me that I couldn't believe. You know, she said, I don't respect you as a man and I don't trust you. And I'm not perfect, but I didn't feel like I deserved that. You know, like that just, you know, that's not a productive, you know, that's not a productive thing to say. You know, that's not trying to work through something, you know, like, it triggered this anger in me, you know, where I couldn't help the way I was feeling. I wanted to hit her in the face. And I've never had that feeling before. I didn't grow up in a home where people hit each other. I haven't been in a fight with another man. I haven't had this feeling in a prior relationship, but I wanted to hit her in the face so badly for the way that she spoke to me and the way I was feeling at that time. It's left me with this feeling of feeling unsafe, you know, being around her, because I don't want to get to that point. I don't want to end up doing something I regret and the cops get involved. And it's like, that just sounds terrible. So I left my house 2 weeks ago. I've been staying in a hotel, you know, just trying to figure things out. And I think, you know, I've been talking to a lot of guys about this weekend and over the last couple of weeks, because I'm trying to figure out if this is normal. Like, does this come up in relationships? Or is this like, did I pick a woman who, or do, you know, like, so, you know, anyway, the reason I'm bringing this up tonight is because this experience brought out this anger in me that I didn't even know was there. You know, just this really primal thing. And, you know, I guess I'm still trying to figure that out. And so that's why I'm kind of opening up and sharing it with you guys. So, with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
He is a perpetrator against the victim, and next thing you know, flips around, and then we're the victim, and they're perpetrating, and it's not a good dance. I recommend the tango or the foxtrot over that. If you're getting abused, you know, but it's not okay. It is not okay, and you need to literally take a break, which sounds like, you know, what's going on, but this, you know, I don't want to be bad to my wife, I don't want her to be bad to me. And as I said brilliantly earlier, good marriages are better than bad marriages. Once you're raged, you can't think. Once someone is in a rageful situation, their brain gets disengaged. I should have said that. So it doesn't sound good. And if you're getting abused, you know, stop. Like, don't allow it. Remove yourself and set limits and stick to the limits. And vice versa. If someone says to you, "You're abusing me," just listen. See, you know what's going on. So I just wanted to say that. So, who has a burning desire? Who would like to share?
Yeah. So, for me, pray, meditate, breathe, and journal. I think those would probably been four fundamentals in addressing the anger issue that I've had. For most of my life. And that, you know, those are the things that I've used to really help deal with it in my sobriety. And this is just personally for me, you know, some things that have worked, and surely in addition to some other things that you know, I could go on and on about. But one thing I do now is I journal. If you could ask me to journal something, you know, 2 years ago, no way. I tried it once anyway, and it didn't work, so no. But I've actually come around to it, and I do it every day now. I do what's called free journaling, which is where, well, that's what it's evolved into, where I just turn for 20 minutes uninterrupted, either on my computer or on a pad, not a spiral valve, one of the ones where you can rip it off. And I just go on and on. I write about whatever the heck I'm, you know, something that's been bothering me, even if it was earlier in the day. And I let it all out. I say some pretty nasty things, some pretty brutal things, and I don't hold anything back. And you know, it's like I'm talking to someone, you know, saying everything that I want to say, but that it, you know, wouldn't be appropriate to say, you know, by societal norms. That's really nasty stuff sometimes, but that's the point of it. Then when I'm done with it, you know, I either, if it's on the computer, I delete all the text from the document, save a blank page, or I crumple it up and I throw it in the garbage. Now, one of the other things I do, I mentioned, you know, meditation. I mean, praying and meditating are the same thing to me right now. Although there's, you know, breathing, you can even say that's a meditation. I inhale, you know, one exercise I do is, inhale for 8 seconds, exhale for 4 seconds. Or I'm sorry, other way around. Inhale for 4 seconds, exhale for 8 seconds. I heard that somewhere. That seems to be a good tip. It's basic, you know, it's not complicated, but it seems to work pretty good. And I do it, you know, as many times as I feel I need to. You know, five or ten times is usually pretty good for me. When I know I have a resentment against somebody, and most of the time that is because I feel angry at somebody, I try to, I say, you know, if I'm angry at my boss, I say, you know, God bless, you know, my boss and change me. Now that's, you know, might sound easier said than done, but, and I'll say it a few times in a row, but it's, I do it because, at least at first, it was weird to do that, because it's like, why would I say that? I don't really wish that on this person, but I just force myself to do it anyway. And, you know, that's, that has really helped me. And I'll just do it a few times, just to kind of solidify that thought in my head. Let's see, I said journal, meditate, breathe, pray. I mean, those things for me, and that's not the only part of it, you know. Recovery is something to be worked in a lot of different, you know, from a lot of different angles, but those things I feel have been crucial for me at not just nipping anger in the butt, so to speak, and getting me through, you know, kind of getting me through tough spots, but also staying sober, obviously. I still experience anger every day, somewhat, you know, sometimes more, sometimes less, but those are one piece of the puzzle, or several pieces of the puzzle of my experience, so hopefully that helps somebody else. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. I'm very desire, last call, I'm going to share, otherwise I'm going to circle up. Have a moment of silence for people inside and outside these rooms who are suffering. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Keep coming back, because our worship is worth it.